Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Local and state news. Vision Vocational Programs, part of MC Board Forum by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstMP.com. Candidates for Place 7 on the Midland College Board took questions about their vision for the school during a forum Saturday. Those running for Midland College Board and school board candidates were invited to a forum at the MLK Center in East Midland. The event was hosted by the Negro and Professional Women's Club of Midland, the League of Women Voters, and the District 2 Ad Hoc Committee. And there were differences in the answers from the three candidates, Adrian Carrasco, Will Green, and R. Sean Rainey. Green, a board member since 1996, said that the board will continue to respond to changes in the community, using the Bachelor Program for Applied Technology as an example of when the board added or moved on from programs. When asked about vocation programs needed, Green said the willingness to change with the community also was part of the board's plan. He used the college's decision to create an aviation program as an example of the board responding to past needs of the community. Carrasco said his vision included culinary and dental hygienist programs and eliminating time constraints for students wanting to be part of Midland College. He said Midland College is a jewel of the community and also called for more partnerships to help develop a robust workforce. He included improving programs for diesel mechanics and drivers, but also stated that the school must help prepare a workforce for the next downturn. Rainey's vision is to create the community connections that will help the college flourish for the next 50 years. That means turning out students who can fill jobs. Specifically, Rainey spoke about how attorneys in Midland have battled to keep a paralegal program open and keep opportunities for good-paying jobs. He also used the need for court reporters as another opportunity to meet a need in the community. Not attending the forum were Ralph Way and Scott Lynch.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, September 27th, 2020. Section A. November 3rd election features bevy of candidates. Early voting begins October 13th, runs through October 30th. By Bob Campbell. If it takes a big election to get you interested, November 3rd's whopper should do it. Early voting starts early this year, October 13th, pushed back a week by Governor Greg Abbott to give leeway for officials coping with COVID-19. And with the rollicking race between Republican President Donald Trump and Democratic nominee Joe Biden topping the list of national, statewide, county, and city contests, there is plenty for the conscientious voter to digest. There's the U.S. senatorial contest between the Republican incumbent John Cornyn, a 68-year-old former Texas Attorney General who has served in Washington since 2002, and Democrat Mary Jennings, M.J. Heger, a 44-year-old former Air Force pilot from Cedar Park who flew more than 100 search and rescue missions in Afghanistan and won the Distinguished Flying Cross. San Angelo native and Republican nominee August Pfluger, Democratic nominee Mark Hogg, and Libertarian Wasey Alpha Cody will settle their competition to succeed retiring 11th District Congressman Mike Conway of Midland. And while 81st District State Representative Brooks Landgraf of Odessa is unopposed, there is a healthy dollop of suspense about whether the Republicans in the Texas House of Representatives in Austin will keep their 9-seat majority. A hot municipal election is being conducted in Odessa with a new mayor to be chosen from among three candidates, and with three city council seats being vied for by 10 candidates. County and city early voting will be held through October 30th, including the weekend of October 24th and 25th, at the County Administration Building at 1010 East 8th, Odessa College, the Kellis Turner and Salinas Park Community Centers, and Westlake Ace Hardware. I think we'll have a record turnout because of the response I see from people wanting to see what's happening in the country continue under President Trump, said Ector County Republican Chairman Tisha Crow. They say he doesn't seem like a politician. He just seems like a normal guy, and they don't feel like they're being sold a bill of goods. They are being led by someone they respect and trust. President Trump is a very successful businessman, and he is leading the country as a businessman. There is such a negative perception of politicians shaking hands and kissing babies. It doesn't work anymore. Crow said the turnout's in-progress appearance might be misleading with the extra week of early voting. It may not look as busy because we have the third week, she said. There may even be some poll locations where we don't see anyone for a day or two, but I'm optimistic because people are responding in droves at our party headquarters. However, Crow said down-ballot Republicans might have problems. The Democrats are pouring a lot of money into Texas, she said. The further you get from the name of Trump, the more difficult it'll be. We will have to work hard to hold on to the Texas House because there may be slimmer margins. County Democratic Chairman Hannah Horick said she is really optimistic because our county fundraising is the highest it's been as far back as our records go. Folks are coming out of the woodwork who've never been involved with us before, Horick said. The more folks who register to vote, the bigger share the Democrats will get. She said everyone she had talked with was voting early. Horick said Biden has a chance to carry Texas, and Heger is an energetic hopeful who threatens Cornyn's reelection. Attributing Democrats' support to concerns about health care and the economy, she said Hogg is at a disadvantage in District 11 because of its configuration, but he is a credible candidate who has raised more than $100,000. I'm almost certain we will flip the Texas House, Horick said. All the targeted districts are filled with amazing candidates who have the resources they need to get in touch with the voters. We were so close in 2018, and we just have a little bit more to go. Healthcare is a top-of-the-mind issue for Texas voters because we weren't equipped for the pandemic. The powers that be haven't responded in ways that serve the state. We need leadership and a holistic approach in Odessa because our unemployment rate in May was the highest in the state at 13%. While more people might want to vote by mail, the state regulations governing that method are unchanged. County Elections Administrator Lisa Sertouche says you must be age 65 or older, be disabled, or be outside the county all during early voting and on election day to use a mail-in ballot. Ector County citizens being held in the county jail may also vote by mail. You may request a mail-in ballot by calling the elections office at 432-498-4030 or print and use a mail-in ballot from the office's website at co.ector.tx.us/page/ector.elections. Sertouche said the county's and city's early voting locations will be at the County Administration Building at 1010 East 8th Street, Odessa College, the Kellis Turner and Salinas Park Community Centers, and Westlake Ace Hardware. She said the election workers will wear masks and that gloves will be provided. The voting machines will be cleaned after each voter finishes. The nonpartisan municipal contests feature the lively mayor's race among City Councilmen Dewey Bryant, Javier Joven, and Gloria G. Apolinario. The council member at large contest has current mayor David R. Turner, Latasha Gentry, Joanne Davenport Littleton, and Denise Swanner, while the District 1 council race is among Mark Mata, Michael K. Shelton Sr., Tiki Davis, and Eddie Mitchell. The District 2 council seat will be filled either by Stephen P. Thompson or Rachel D. Miner. Unopposed Republican incumbents, in addition to Landgraf, are Sheriff Mike Griffiths, Tax Assessor-Collector Lindy Wright, and 446th District Court Judge Sarah Kate Billingsley. Unopposed Republican nominees are 358th District Court Judge W. Stacy Trotter for 11th Court of Appeals Place 3 Justice in Eastland, Justin Lowe for 161st District Court Judge, Dusty Gallivan for District Attorney, Greg Barber for County Attorney, Mike Gardner for Precinct 1 Commissioner, Don Stringer for Precinct 3 Commissioner, Mike Patton for Precinct 2 Constable, and Pete Anchondo for Precinct 4 Constable. Volunteers needed. The crisis to survivors of domestic and sexual violence immediately after an assault occurs. Volunteers are required by the Texas Attorney General to complete a training course and 10 hours of shadowing. Trainings run from noon to 3 p.m. Tuesday, October 8th, 13th, 15th, 22nd, 27th, November 5th, 10th, and 19th. This course will cover the dynamics of sexual and domestic violence, trauma-informed care, and other tools that will help you support survivors. Members of the CRT volunteer for overnight 5 p.m. to 8 a.m. shifts on a rotating basis. Here's how it works. Survivors, law enforcement, or medical professionals call the 24/7 hotline to request an advocate. CCWTX staff calls your personal phone to let you know that you are needed. CRT members will be asked to arrive at the hospital within 30 minutes of receiving a call. Upon arrival, you may provide information, new clothes, company, or other forms of assistance for the survivor. For an application, visit tinyurl.com/Y2D9WYVG. The Prevention Services Director will follow up with you to talk about the commitment and conduct a brief phone interview. For more information, email Elizabeth Texiera at elizabeth@ccwtx.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Monday, September 28th, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Analyst Tells Tipro of Looming Energy Crisis, by Mela McEwen. Anas F. Alhaji, Managing Partner, Energy Outlook Advisors, has some unconventional thoughts about the shale revolution that transformed the energy industry in the Permian Basin, Texas, the U.S., and even the world. He offered his contrarian views during the Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association's 2020 summer conference, held virtually last week. First, he said that messages being sent out by American politicians about the nation's energy independence, combined with assessments that oil demand has already peaked, could lead to a massive energy crisis all of us will pay the price for. Alhaji said that such a crisis could depend on how producing nations react, especially if they decide not to invest in shales. If it's determined oil is not needed because of proliferation of electric vehicles will use electricity from wind and solar facilities, he said operators should make sure that car bodies come from oil and components of wind turbines and solar panels should be derived from oil. If electronic vehicles don't deliver and shale doesn't deliver, and other energy sources don't deliver, we will be in a massive energy crisis, he said. Oil will go towards materials, and the only way to get oil is to pay a high price, high enough to replace the profits made from the materials. To keep global oil demand at the 100 million barrels a day it averaged in 2019, he said 700 electric vehicles would need to be on the road by 2050, compared to 10 million currently in use today. To meet the demand of 100 million barrels a day in 2050, that oil will have to come fresh oil. Imagine the investment that will be needed. Global demand will continue to grow, supply will not keep up, and we're headed for an energy crisis, he said. He started off his appearance by pointing out that the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, which celebrated its 60th anniversary earlier this month, has ties to TIPRO. OPEC's organization was announced at a TIPRO conference in May 1960 by Sheikh Abdullah Tariki. The idea behind the formation of OPEC was largely to match production to demand, Al-Haji said. That mismatch was behind the drive to end the ban on exports of U.S. oil, he said. At issue is the mismatch in the quality of oil produced and the makeup of U.S. refineries, he said. When U.S. exports resumed, he said they replaced the light sweet crudes Algeria, Libya, and Nigeria were exporting to the U.S., while U.S. imports of heavier crudes from Saudi Arabia and Kuwait rose. That is why Saudi Arabia crashed the market in 2014, Al-Haji said, because Algeria, Libya, and Nigeria had been forced to compete with the Saudis for a market share in Asia and Europe. The market crash has rendered void the economic models used by banks and analysts, he said. Right now, we have a demand trap where oil demand does not react to price or income. Whatever OPEC does to incentivize demand and prices will not work. It's related to psychology and social issues. People are staying home because of the coronavirus. Whether gasoline is 5 cents or $5 a gallon, it doesn't matter. It's clear, he said, from what we're seeing now in demand and inventories worldwide, there's a decline in floating storage, a decline in oil on the water. Exports are being sent to consuming countries. The history of humanity is one of energy transition, he said. I believe there is nothing new in energy transition over thousands of years, but I do see two trends. The first trend is we're headed for an energy cocktail. That means no more oil companies. They are energy companies, where every company is in the energy of everything. Even car companies will be energy companies. Service companies will be energy companies. The second trend is we are changing so that renewables are competing with renewables, as government subsidies incentivize competing renewable resources. This article is entitled MISD Board Candidates Weigh In on Lee Renaming by Stuart Doreen. The next Midland ISD board likely won't have to deal with the renaming of Robert E. Lee High School, but candidates have weighed in on the issue. The topic was raised Saturday at a candidates forum at MLK Jr. The forum was hosted by the Negro and Professional Women's Club of Midland, the League of Women Voters, and the District 2 Ad Hoc Committee. There wasn't much support for keeping the current name of the high school on Neely Avenue. Brian Murray, the current representative of District 7, told those in attendance he was the lone board member to vote against the call to rename the school. Murray said he wanted both sides to sit down, hear the other side's heart, and compromise. People wanted to be heard, Murray said. Let's talk about it. The other board member at Saturday's forum, District 1 Representative James Fuller, didn't mince words. He said the name change is necessary and that it was the responsibility of district leaders to address systemic racism in the community, and that just dropping the Robert E. preserves the current situation. The discussion on Saturday was mostly about process and not necessarily about the name. Instead of talking about the decision board members are set to make during their regular meeting in October, there was talk of what should have been done. Rachel Davis said the board needed to stop focusing on adult issues. She hoped for a compromise for the sake of the kids, the focus put on academic and financial accountability. It breaks my heart to see Midland separated the way it is, she said. Katie Joyner, a candidate for District 4, called the situation a complicated matter, and that the board took on a difficult decision and its members did what they thought was right. you are electing a voice to ask themselves what they think is right. Matt Galindo, a candidate for District 1, supports the name change, but wanted community members to talk to each other rather than fight and bicker. I have concerns about the process. Student outcomes won't change until adult behaviors change. Steve Vargas, a candidate for District 4, said the only name he cares about is high performing. He questioned if the name change was going to change that. He said there are schools without potable water and other matters that have nothing to do with the name change. Table it, talk about it, reevaluate it, he said. Michael Booker, a candidate for District 1, said he wasn't against a name change, is fine with dropping Robert E., and that there are more important issues such as getting Midland ISD students college, military, and career ready. Joel Deal, a candidate for District 4, said the name change showed a lack of priority setting by the school board. While issues like how we are going back to school were looming over the summer, it was decided this was an issue. It showed a systemic problem of the school board doing what it wanted, when it wanted. Not present. Candidates who didn't attend the event were Robert Marquez, MISD District 2, and Joseph Gallegos, MISD District 7. This article is entitled "Smoke from California Wildfires Reaches Midland" by Caitlin Randall. Smoke from ongoing wildfires in California and other West Coast states has reached Midland, bringing periods of low visibility, cooler temperatures, and drops in air quality. Scott Klebauer, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Midland, has been tracking haze from the fires since it spread to Midland about 2 weeks ago. He said smoke currently is trapped at about 30,000 feet above the wildfires. When that smoke is caught by the jet stream, or one of the air currents blowing west wind from the west, it can travel east and cause haze, he said. There was actually smoke being reported all the way out on the west coast, like around Pennsylvania. It's making its way across the country, Klebauer said. The haze was strongest in Midland last weekend when it caused visibility in and around the city to drop to 5 miles, according to Klebauer. There were also signs of worse than normal air quality last weekend, with high indicators that it could affect those who are sensitive to air pollution. Even a week later, a map from the Associated Press tracking the air quality index in the U.S. in real time showed moderate particle pollution over Midland on Friday afternoon. Hazy skies also kept temperatures about 10 degrees lower a week ago, Klebauer said. He said smoke from the west created a wall that prevented temperatures from rising into the upper 80s where they should be for this time of year. Temperatures have rebounded, and it will be much higher until a cold front swoops in next week, he said. But although there's no end in sight for the West Coast wildfires, Klebauer said it's unlikely Midland would experience haze at the same level as last weekend because the wind pattern has shifted. He said most of the smoke that blew in already has cleared out of the area. As long as the fires are still going on, there will still be smoke out west, he said. Every now and then, occasionally, you might see some slight haze in Midland, but I don't think you're going to see anything like what we saw over the course of last week. That was probably about as bad as it could get here. This is the local and state page. This article is entitled "Interim Executive Director Guides MOSC" by J.C. Lewis. After Midland-Odessa Symphony and Chorale's Pops Concert and Chorale performances were canceled because of the pandemic, Interim Executive Director Ethan Wills said he and conductor Gary Lewis are working together to figure out the season and make adjustments where needed. Our first show was scheduled for September and ended up being canceled back in May, Wills said. We had E.T., the extraterrestrial in concert, coming up for the Pops Concert, and the truth is the orchestra is so big and it's such a mammoth performance, and we want a big audience. That couldn't have happened at 50% capacity. Wills, who was named interim director in July after executive director Jeanette Kolakoff retired, said he is trying to balance two sides of the coin in terms of spacing between the audience and musicians. We are shooting for 6 feet of social distancing between musicians on the stage, which means the stage is going to look different, he said. Some musicians might be wearing masks, while others have covers on their instruments. we might bring in some plexiglass safety measures. He said the chamber groups will continue to perform throughout the year, but the events might look different. Our chamber groups are still performing, he said. They won't be performing in the same spaces that we used to. Instead of playing a chapel, we're moving to the atrium of that church. The first performance of the season will be a Masterworks concert featuring soprano Barbara Padilla on November 7th. Odessa Arts recently gave MOSC a $20,000 cultural tourism grant. Will said Odessa Arts Executive Director Randy Hamm has been critical with helping the arts during the pandemic. He said the arts have been especially important despite work for artists and musicians being reduced because of canceled performances. It has been more tumultuous than just coronavirus in 2020, he said. With no arts, I think we are missing out on something good for our society and good for our culture. We will collectively gather who we can and who is able to put on something. Will said MOSC will have to get creative with education incentives this year, with the uncertainty of being able to present large events. I come from a music education background, he said. I can guarantee that MOSC will do everything we can to try to reach out and try to engage the community, whether that's through new concerts or new ideas. Wills, who was originally from Pittsburgh, moved to West Texas about 6 years ago to teach at Howard College. He has an undergraduate degree in music education from Slippery Rock University, a master's of music in trombone performance from the University of North Texas, and is finishing his doctorate in fine arts administration at Texas Tech University. Before he was hired to oversee MOSC, he had been working as a freelance musician with Ector County ISD, Midland ISD, Midland Christian School, and Trinity School, and also served as a substitute trombone player for MOSC.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American on Monday, September 28th. Arrest made in deadly shooting. A teen was arrested and booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center Sunday following a Saturday shooting that left two injured and one dead. Xavier Jackson, age 19, was arrested and charged with first-degree murder following a shooting in North Odessa Saturday. Jail records indicate that there is no bond posted as of Sunday afternoon. An Odessa Police Department release detailed the shooting occurred just after 4 p.m. Saturday at the 1800 block of East 49th Street, with three being shot. One man, identified as 18-year-old Emmanuel Urias, was pronounced dead at the hospital by medical personnel, a news release said. Police say that next of kin have been notified. Two other victims, 20-year-old Xavier Joseph and an unidentified 16-year-old male, are being treated for non-life-threatening injuries. According to a news release, Jackson shot at Urias and the 16-year-old and was later located and interviewed by detectives. The release stated that detectives obtained a warrant for Jackson's arrest. Odessa police previously reported that they do not have a motive to the shooting. Police added that the investigation is ongoing and that more charges are expected to be filed. Anyone with information in reference to this incident is encouraged to contact the Odessa Police Department at 432-333-3641 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS. It's Addiction Recovery Month. This is a guest column written by Carol Cates, the Chief Nursing Officer at Odessa Regional Medical Center. I have the great privilege of interacting with heroes every day. I work with doctors, nurses, first responders, and healthcare workers of every flavor in my job, and then I go home to my husband, a teacher. It's hard for me to explain how rewarding it is to get up in the morning when every single day you get to see someone making a positive difference in the world. I'm not saying there aren't negative things and bad days, but I can say the positives I get to see far outweigh the negatives. There are other heroes I get to see frequently. Those are people recovering from drug and alcohol addiction. While I wouldn't wish the battles they wage daily on anyone, I keep hoping to meet more of those people. I want to meet more of these heroes because I hope that every addict can find their way to recovery rather than the alternative, which is generally death. I firmly believe these peoples are heroes because every day they get out of bed, keep waging a war to stay sober, and it's not a war against an external force, like on a battlefield, or for us in healthcare with a disease or trauma. It's a war against their own bodies and minds, which means the war never really ends. Yet those people keep fighting, day after day, year after year. I'm pretty sure it doesn't get much more heroic than that. According to the National Institutes of Health, NIH, National Institute on Drug Abuse, the statistics on drug and alcohol abuse are nothing short of grim. Substance abuse costs about $740 billion annually related to crime, lost work productivity, and health care. In 2018, 67,367 people in the U.S. died from drug overdoses, and another 88,000 people die annually related to alcohol. Another 36,000 people annually die not because of alcohol abuse, but from trauma related to alcohol and drug abuse, mainly car accidents caused by people driving while drunk or high. An estimated 65% of the prison population in the U.S. have an active substance abuse disorder. Another 20% of the prison population, while they don't meet the criteria of having a substance abuse disorder, were under the influence of drugs or alcohol when they committed the crime that resulted in their imprisonment. People who recover from alcohol and drug abuse save their own life, and they make a big difference for others in terms of cost and safety. Recovery is incredibly difficult. Addiction quite literally changes the brain and how chemicals in the brain function, making it a chronic condition that has no cure. That is why so many people relapse when they try to quit, especially when they try to quit on their own. That is why it is so important for people fighting addiction to get help. Just like regular visits to a physician helps a diabetic, another chronic condition without a cure, stay on track with their diet and medications, regular contact with an addiction recovery program, medical and/or behavioral-based, helps with addiction recovery. In fact, the rates of relapse for chronic medical conditions and addiction recovery are quite similar without the help of a physician or other person specialized in dealing with those problems. The other reason it's a good idea to seek help when trying to stop an addiction is that many drugs and alcohol can cause life-threatening problems if they are stopped abruptly. That process of weaning someone from drugs and alcohol is called detoxification, also known as detox. It is usually done under the supervision of a physician and with specialized medications to help control severe symptoms. But detox alone is not recovery. The addictive substance may be out of a person's body after detox, but the addiction is still there. Detox without treatment for the addiction itself is rarely successful in achieving recovery. If you or a loved one has a problem with drug and/or alcohol addiction and wants to start down the road to recovery, there are many options for help. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services has a division called the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. Their website, findtreatment.gov, has listings of local agencies and treatment facilities to help you start on the road to recovery. In addition, you can call their helpline at 800-662-HELP for assistance 24/7. If you are recovering, you are a hero. Even if you relapse, keep going down the recovery road. It doesn't change your hero status. Just like Superman in the comics, kryptonite doesn't make him not a hero. It just makes the work of being a hero tougher that day. You, like Superman, are always a hero when you are working on recovery. Odessa Christian returns to in person. Familiar face is now principal. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. After their roughly 4.5-month hiatus from their daily routine, students at Odessa Christian School returned in mid-August, and they were happy to do so. The school has 110 students from 3 years old to 8th grade. Principal Pam Walker said enrollment is down a little due to the COVID-19 pandemic. They have a staff of 24, including 15 teachers. The music, library, and art teachers travel from classroom to classroom. The small campus is taking all the necessary precautions to curb the spread of COVID-19, she said. Every staff member takes their own temperature and, quote, we're out at the cars taking the kids when they get out of the car every day. They go out for PE and they go out for computers, but other than that, they stay in their rooms all day just to keep the exposure down to a minimum, said Walker, who was a longtime principal for Ector County ISD. Walker said the lack of visitors said this measure has made the building quieter. Quote, we don't let anybody in. We don't let any outsiders in. We don't let parents in. It's really cut down a lot, Walker added. Quote, we don't have behavior issues, very seldom, and we didn't have a lot to start with. The only time I've had to deal with anything is in PE, and it's just because they are so antsy. They sit in their rooms, and the teachers are really good about using Go Noodle activity videos to get them moving in the classrooms and things like that, so they just don't have to sit all day long, she said. And they do have a recess time. They go one class at a time outside, end quote. Chapel is conducted mainly virtually. Whole school chapel is conducted Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. On Tuesday and Thursday, there is an in-class chapel where the music teacher goes to the room that's hosting it and puts up Zoom so everyone can watch it. This is Walker's second year as head of Odessa Christian. She replaced Nancy Campbell, who retired in December 2019 after 8.5 years as principal. Before taking the leadership role at Odessa Christian, Campbell was on the board for 5 years. Walker was with ECISD for 32 years. She was principal at San Jacinto Elementary School for 4 years before retiring, and 10 years at Ireland Elementary before that. Walker served as an assistant principal and teacher in a variety of elementary grade levels. She also worked in Amherst for a year and Sherwood Christian Academy in Odessa. A native of Hobbs, New Mexico, Walker moved to Odessa when she was 3 years old. Walker began her education at Odessa College, then earned a bachelor's degree in general education, kindergarten through eighth grade, from Hardin-Simmons University in Abilene, and then a master's in school administration from the University of Texas Permian Basin. She also took courses at the University of Northern Colorado in Greeley, a previous OA article said. In the middle of all that, Walker spent 1.5 years in Ghana. She has unofficially adopted a family from that country, the article said. Quote, the couple that I went with had gone over there on a mission trip with their church out of Colorado and felt called to go back and drill water wells. I was at their house in the summer right after they had been on that mission trip, and they just started talking about the education need over there. I said, quote, I want to go, so I did, Walker said at the time. I'm adventurous. I've always been that way. I went in 95, and I came back in 97, she added. The librarian at Odessa Christian was one of Walker's teachers at Ireland Elementary and thought of her when Odessa Christian was looking for a new principal. Walker was reluctant to take the job at first, but she's glad she did. Quote, I love it. It's wonderful. is definitely a God-given job, she said. She does enjoy the smaller size of the school. Quote, I like the Christian environment. We've got great parents. They're very supportive. Good kids. We had a great start to the school year. We haven't really had any hiccups. We've had no COVID issues, she said, knocking on her desk with her fist. We're prepared if it happens. End quote. When everything shut down in March, Walker said they just dug in and started using Zoom and teaching virtually as best they could. Walker said that helped her acclimate to the school, quote, just because there are so many private nonprofit things that I didn't know about and the accountability. We're accredited by the National Christian School Association, and there were lots of things there that I needed to learn. But kids are kids, and curriculum is curriculum, parents are parents. It was an easy transition, Walker said. She agreed that if you go back to work after retiring, going to a school like Odessa Christian is a good way to go. Quote, I had no intention, Walker said. God had a different plan, and I can talk about God now. End quote. Campbell said Walker is a great principal who brings a set of leadership skills to the school that promotes teachers' professional growth, students' academic success, and parents' confidence and trust. End quote. While she was retired, Walker said she did enjoy it. She stepped down because her mother was not doing well. Quote, Then I started back to work in August, and she passed in October. I believe it was a God-given thing because I would have been probably lost with nothing to do. I love working with kids and teachers and parents. It's a joy to come to work every day. End quote. She added that she doesn't miss the STAR tests, but she loves working with people and helping students and teachers grow. Quote, It's very rewarding teaching kids about Christ, to me it is, so I enjoy that a lot, the chapel part of it, and being able to talk to kids about their relationship with Christ, Walker said. Isabella Montero, an 8-year-old third grader, Shane McKinney, a 10-year-old fifth grader, and Richley Hancock, a 6-year-old first grader, are all glad to be back in school. Quote, I really like being back with my friends, and we have so much work to do, and I love PE, Montero said. Walker noted that third grade is a big step up from second. Quote, Second grade is easier, and third grade is a little bit more harder, Montero said. She added that they are learning subtraction, and sometimes I really don't get it. The students are also being taught about growth mindset. Quote, Growth mindset is when you have like a bubblegum brain, and a bubblegum brain is when you can stretch your mind and think of new things, Montero explained. But fixed mindset is when you want to stay like that. You don't want to try new things. End quote. McKinney said he thinks being back at school is fun, except there isn't enough physical activity. He added that it's good to see his friends again, and it was weird not to return to school in the spring and going to school remotely. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Editor's note, Ector County last updated COVID-19 numbers Friday afternoon. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 4,785. Ector County negative, 22,534, out of 27,635 tested, with 316 pending. 98 deaths. Recovered, 4,062. Active cases, 625. Midland County, 3,707 confirmed cases with 83 deaths. Texas, 735,132 confirmed cases with 6,016,907 tested. Total Texas deaths, 15,522. U.S. cases, 7,319,274 total confirmed cases and 209,438 deaths. Find out more online at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. Here are some Odessa American quick hits. The Permian Basin Adult Literacy Center has scheduled a legal literacy live stream featuring local writer and president of the Permian Basin Bookies, Leonard Height, from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. September 29th at www.facebook.com/PB Adult Literacy Center. Visit https://events.pbalc.org. The Heritage of Odessa Foundation is now accepting nominations for the 37th Annual Awards of Excellence and Community Service. The 2020 Community Statesman Awards will be presented to men and women who have made significant contributions to the quality of life in Odessa. Nominations will be considered in the following categories: arts, education, humanities, religion, business, government, law, philanthropy, service in a profession, community service, health and science, media, and ranching. The 2020 Distinguished Former Odessans Award recognizes former citizens whose professional and civic achievements bring honor to Odessa. Deadline for submission is October 15th. Official nomination forms are available by calling 432-498-4000 or at the front desk of the Odessa American, 700 North Grant Avenue, Suite 800. Nominations must be sent to Awards Committee, Heritage of Odessa Foundation, Post Office Box 3908, Odessa, Texas, 79760. Community Statesman and Distinguished Former Odessan Award Dinner will take place at 6:30 p.m. February 25th, 2021, at the MCM Grande Hotel Fun Dome, 6201 East Business I-20.
This is the Business and Oil page. This column is entitled, Pandemic Has Reversed Rising Tide of Economic Gains. The Economist, by M. Ray Perryman. The more than 10 years of sustained economic expansion that preceded the pandemic, the longest period of growth in U.S. history, brought notable progress across a broad spectrum. The latest income and poverty data from the U.S. Census Bureau through 2019 illustrate this point, indicating how the sustained strength benefited individuals and families across the nation. Real inflation-adjusted median household income increased an impressive 6.8% between 2018 and 2019 to reach $67,703. It was the highest level since the series began in 1967. It's an impressive increase from just 5 years before, when median household income was $58,001, which was lower than 5 years before that, when it was $59,458. Keep in mind that the median is the level at which half are above and half are below. It's not just some huge gains at the top end driving the increases, although there has been some widening of the gap. In fact, 2019 real median incomes were up for all racial ethnic groups, with increases of 5.7% for whites, 7.9% for blacks, 10.6% for Asians, and 7.1% for Hispanics. Families, single people, and single parents were all better off. The 2019 real median earnings of women increased a little faster than men. Many more people were working, with the total number of individuals with earnings up by 2.2 million. Not surprisingly, the number of families in poverty declined notably. The official poverty rate in 2019 was 10.5%, decreasing for the fifth consecutive year and down 1.3 percentage points from 2018. Since 2014, the poverty rate has fallen 4.3 percentage points. In 2019, there were 34 million people in poverty, approximately 4.2 million fewer folks than in 2018. The Black and Hispanic poverty rates were the lowest since the data was published, 1959 and 1972, respectively. Historically significant low unemployment was also observed in 2019 across racial, ethnic, and gender and age groups. More than a decade of expansion brought prosperity at rates not seen in many years. It is apparent that a rising tide can indeed lift multiple boats, with growth and job opportunities in the private sector driving widespread progress. Obviously, the pandemic has changed the situation dramatically, and the contrast between the historically high incomes and declining poverty last year and steady progress for years before with the current challenges facing millions of Americans is striking. Recent data tells us, for example, that the number of food insecure households has doubled. The ongoing gains have been reversed and will take a while to return. If, however, we can keep the structure together and help businesses survive and families avoid financial disaster, we can both restore past gains and achieve new heights in the future. Stay safe. M. Ray Perryman is president and CEO of the Perryman Group.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Best walking speed for weight loss. Dear Dr. Roach, I'm quite overweight with some physical mobility and fatigue issues because of autoimmune-related inflammatory arthritis. Some days I can get about a block at a fairly brisk pace, but I have to stop for a few minutes because of the pain in my legs, pelvis, and back, or I will fall down. Other days I can get two or three blocks at a brisker than usual pace without needing to stop. When it comes to burning calories, is it better for me to walk slower and take less breaks, or to walk faster and take more breaks to get my pain under control? Must I reach a certain heart rate and keep it there for a certain period of time in order to be doing anything meaningful for weight loss? Unfortunately, because of the pandemic restrictions, walking around is the only kind of exercise I'm able to do right now. The pools, gyms, and yoga studios are closed. FBC. Answer. For most people, longer and more intense workouts are generally more effective for weight loss. In your case, overly intense workouts are not a good idea. Overdoing it can lead to pain in the joints and muscles and soft tissue. I recommend a slower, steadier exercise regimen, which I hope will help build up your stamina and reduce your risk of falls and injuries. High-intensity exercise is needed to gain a high degree of cardiac fitness and for maximal performance. However, for weight loss and overall longevity, moderate exercise is very nearly as good.
Dear Abby, wife starts to resent man's constant demands for gifts. Dear Abby, I feel uncomfortable receiving gifts, and I find it hard to meet my husband's requests for constant gifts, especially when I feel I already give so much. He constantly asks me to buy him things, some of which are very expensive. I'm a saver, not a spender, and I try to watch my budget. I already pay all the household bills, even though we make the same amount of money. I owned my house before we met, and he chips in with occasional upgrades and maintenance, or takes me out to dinner once in a while. But I pay for the vast majority of expenses, as well as perform the majority of chores. I have sacrificed and paid for all our vacations because I wanted the experience, and I accept that. The problem is, he seems to feel unappreciated, suggesting that if I gifted him more often, he would know he was constantly thought of. He says he buys me random gifts, usually small items to which there are strings attached or implied reciprocity. These requests, especially when he buys for himself quite a bit, seem like a smack in the face to me. I feel he's impulsive with purchases and won't be happy until I have nothing left. How do I handle meeting my husband's need for constant validation without going bankrupt or having all the love sucked out from resentment? Mentioning my financial limitations doesn't seem to quench his thirst for more. Excessive in New York. Dear Excessive, if my reading of your letter is accurate, you are doing all the heavy lifting in your marriage. What exactly is your husband contributing except to ask for more? Gifts are supposed to be freely given, not dispensed because they are requested. Whether your husband is greedy, selfish, or extremely needy, I can't guess, but the balance is off in your marriage. This is why I'm recommending you consult a marriage and family therapist. If your husband is willing to go with you and discuss these issues, they can be resolved. If not, please go alone so you can gain clear insight into what and whom you are dealing with. Dear Abby, my mother likes to tell people where to sit at every family gathering. It can be anywhere, including at a restaurant or even at my aunt's house. It's annoying and feels so disrespectful. I'm 49, and my girls are in their early 20s. I try to be patient, but she doesn't consider health conditions or if someone is left-handed. My older daughter was severely traumatized by a former neighbor and doesn't do well with strangers. A few years ago, my cousin's boyfriend came, and my mother ordered my daughter to sit next to him. It was horrible for my daughter. We tried one more time last year at a restaurant, and it was the same. Since then, we have skipped family gatherings. I don't know why she feels she has to tell us what to do. Please help. Pushed Around in Kentucky. Dear Pushed, have you talked to your mother about this? She may, for whatever reason, need to feel she is in control. If she isn't hosting the gathering, this may be her way of maintaining dominance in her relationship with her sister, her children, and grandchildren. I'm not sure you can change your mother, but please don't cut yourself off from the rest of your family. If you aren't seeing them individually, please consider it. For an excellent guide to becoming a better conversationalist and a more sociable person, order How to Be Popular. Send your name and mailing address, plus check or money order, for $8, U.S. funds, to Dear Abby, Popularity Booklet, P.O. Box 447, Mount Morris, Illinois, 61054-0447. Shipping and handling are included in the price. Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. A baby born today has a sun in Libra and a moon in Aquarius until 10:34 a.m. when the moon enters Pisces. Happy birthday for Monday, September 28, 2020. Seductive, magnetic, and wise, you get better as you get older. This year, your complacency is gone. You work harder on a project than you ever have, and you succeed brilliantly with it. Next year, more money. If single, you're outright adored, but tire of your dates easily. You are a heartbreaker before finding your mate. If attached, you're loyal and the passion's intense. Aries can keep up with you. Aries, March 21 through April 19, 5 stars. Today activates your inner life and your dreams. Time spent alone will be treasured. A creative project could begin to take form while you're enjoying a solitary walk. A telephone call or other message is especially meaningful. Tonight, dreams must be interpreted carefully. Taurus, April 20 through May 20, 4 stars. New acquaintances are about to enliven your social circle, but use discretion if someone seems a little too complex or controversial. An electric quality pervades your professional sphere. Today can bring sudden meetings or partings. Tonight, a breakthrough may come. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 4 stars. Extra recognition is coming your way. Demonstrate your capabilities in situations that promote to facilitate advancement. Today promises help from those in positions of power and authority. Promote yourself in visible forms. Tonight, old resentments will melt away. A huge release. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 5 stars. Your writing and teaching abilities will be in top form. Today marks a cycle of renewed energy. Your professional aspirations will bring a special sense of fulfillment. Consider enrolling in a class for further development. Tonight, talk with a friend in a land far, far away. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 3 stars. Be careful of investments and other projects suggested by an adventurous type. There can be a message from the spirit realm regarding daily work and health care. Tolerance and appreciation on your part will open more doors. Tonight, resist the temptation to be overly critical. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 2 stars. Changes you've sensed coming in a partnership begin to manifest today. Respect another's right of choice and individuality. Have a backup plan in place if someone you've depended upon shows a tendency to be unreliable. Tonight, change is another word for growth. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 4 stars. Today opens with some idle chatter among coworkers. Take gossip with the proverbial grain of salt. Relationships with males as well as elders and authority figures will improve. Previous disappointments no longer seem so hard to accept. Tonight, new insight into your own psyche. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 5 stars. Relationships with children follow old patterns. Today brings a delightful series of new contacts. A hobby shared with others invites a closer intimacy. Recognize how friendship can be a catalyst for love. Tonight, a change regarding the tender passions. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 3 stars. Today agitates your home and real estate sector. Plan to redecorate or repair your dwelling. Appreciate it and honor it. Don't let a groundless, vague dissatisfaction invade your haven. Listen well to what others have to say. Tonight, catch up with an elderly family member. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 5 stars. Today highlights your communication sector. Make calls, arrange meetings, and attend to correspondence. You can suddenly feel very proud of the accomplishments of a sibling. A second chance at a project or job is offered. Tonight, celebrate with those you care most about. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 4 stars. There can be some unexpected opportunities to add to your income. Take care to keep working circumstances safe, comfortable, and compatible. Maintain patience about financial matters. Speculation is favored today. Tonight, gradual, steady effort on your part brings great rewards. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 5 stars. Pisces has a unique position amongst the 12 zodiac signs. It marks both the end of the old year and the start of a new cycle. This happens for you today. A new cycle begins after a past door closes. Tonight, awe and wonder. Born today, philosopher Confucius, 551 BC. Actor Marcello Mastroianni, 1924. Actress Brigitte Bardot, 1934.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.